Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is the Spirit Talk with Rosemary Fox and Pat Rivers. And tonight, before we take callers, we are actually going to talk about suicide. And I know that seems like a morbid subject, but you have to realize that this time of year especially, there are a lot of people that are depressed. They don't have enough money and one thing or another. And there's always, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel. So we are going to talk about that for a little bit, and then we're going to take calls. And I'm going to play some Christmas music, too. So do you want to start off, Pat?
Sure. You know, suicide is something that's I look at it this way. There's duality in everything. You know, there's a flip side to every subject on the planet. And so as a registered nurse, we had to study about suicide, and I took, you know, I have a minor in psychology, so I've had a lot of education about suicide. And the thing is, like Rosemary and I were talking before the show, statistic-wise, there's extremely, extremely few people on the planet who have not contemplated, even if it's for a split second, of leaving the planet. You know, life gets overwhelming, and it's just like, I can't take it anymore. I don't want to do this. You know, a lot of people have had the thought. Not that many people have acted out on it. And so there's different levels of suicide thoughts with people. You know, you've got people that just, like I just said, you're just overwhelmed, you can't take it anymore, and you're thinking, I got to get out of here, I can't do this. And then you've got people who have chronic depression, anxiety, and they get to the point they're very hopeless. And that's the people you have to really look out for. People who threaten or really follow through with suicide have gotten to that level of they see no light at all. They absolutely are totally 100% hopeless. And so what Rosemary and I are going to talk about, that aspect, that's the physical person, okay? That's our brain and our emotions and that sort of thing. But the other side of it, the spiritual side, and, you know, jump in here anytime, Rosemary, I feel like I believe in a God of love. You know, whatever our higher power is, I truly believe it's unconditional, no strings attached, true, non-judgmental love. And so religions, not all religions, but a lot of current Western religions, you know, say that suicide is a sin. And you go to, some people believe you stay in purgatory or you go to hell or, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I always go back to this. If you believe in a God of love that truly loves you and created you, no matter what you do or don't do on this life, on this planet, I cannot comprehend in my mind's eye and the vision I have of God, I cannot comprehend you being punished for eternity for any reason whatsoever. You know, a mother who has a child that grows up to be a serial killer still loves their child. Well, most people, they still love their child. They don't love the behavior. Or, you know, if you have a kid that's a thief and a you know, like a lifetime criminal, they don't like the behavior whatsoever, but they still love that child. God loves us so much more than we can even comprehend while we're on this planet. The love from Spirit is so immense. I can't go there. I can't buy into the religious aspect of you're going to hell or purgatory or whatever. And, you know, being a medium, Rosemary and I were talking, I've talked to many people, not many, but there's people that I've talked to that have left the planet. And what I have seen with people who didn't even commit suicide, I've seen people that when they passed, either they weren't ready to go or they were earthbound in the fact that they really fought to stay or they had anger. They haven't, what I call going to the light or going to spirit, you can see the difference in their energy. And so whether you've committed suicide or not, there's people who, to me, that's kind of what purgatory is. It's that place in between the physical body and God. And so you don't even have to commit suicide to be in so-called purgatory, if that's what you want to call it. But to me, personally, you know, different people say, oh, people that have committed suicide, they always come back into, you know, people that believe in rebirth or reincarnation, there's people that say, oh, people who commit suicide immediately jump back into a body and start all over again. You know, everybody's got all these different ideas. Some people say, oh, they're not allowed to come back for 200 years, or oh, they have to come back as a snail or a roach or a lizard, or, you know, there's all of this stuff out there. And I can only talk from my perspective and what I've observed. I don't believe any of that. And I'll tell you, as a nurse, I've taken care. I worked emergency room. I worked intensive care. I can't tell you how many times people tried to commit suicide and it didn't work. And so my philosophy is this. When God says, and I say this all the time, when God says it's time to go, you go. Because look, my example is, how many times have people tried to commit suicide and it didn't work? So it wasn't time for them to go. And I think people who do commit suicide and it works for them, I think that's between them and God. And I cannot contemplate there being this horrible burning in hell outcome to that. I just don't believe that. I don't believe it. You know, when I die and if I get to go over to the other side, I guess they can tell me I'm right or wrong on that. But that's just the way I feel about it. Love is love. God loves us more than we can even comprehend. I don't believe in the hellfire and brimstone. So what do you think about that?
Well, I agree with you on that. So I want to just tell people that are listening here. One of the things, I went to Catholic schools, okay? And am I Catholic? No. I am not anything but a spiritual person with my own personal view or relationship with God. And I think if everybody did that, we'd have less conflict worrying about who's right, who's wrong, and which religion is best for you. But having said that, the reason I mention that is because so many religions talk about that you'll go to hell, that you'll suffer in some way. And I agree with you that if you've got a loving God, why do you think God would then torture you further? If somebody is so distraught and takes their life, do you actually think that God, as we know, the Creator, is now going to torture you further? Do you have lessons to learn? Absolutely. It's kind of like, let me sit you down and let me show you what happened, and no, you shouldn't have done this, and this is the reason why, and look at the cause of the people you left behind. Do I think you have those lessons? Not quite the way I say it, but it's similar to that, where you're going to learn when you get on the other side. I do not believe that you are tortured, and I have two reasons for that, and they are both spirits that I've seen. Because I was brought up to believe, and it's like so many people, that you do go to hell of some sort, okay, if you do something of that nature, I used to do readings in a tea room in St. Pete. It used to be called La-Di-Da Bliss. It's not there anymore. It was off of 4th Street, if there's anybody from this area. And one day, one afternoon, and it was stinking hot. I remember that. It was a really, really hot day, and we had the air cranked up in the store. This lady came in, and she was probably in her late 40s. No, not even a bit younger than that. She looked like an older mother, let's just say that. But anyway, she came in very distressed, wanted the reading. Anyway, she sits down, and I'm doing cards, and I tell her, shuffle the cards. And all of a sudden, this 17-year-old boy appears, okay, doesn't say anything to me. And I go to take the cards from her, and he waves his hand in front of my face, and I sort of flicked my head back, and she said, what is it? And I said, there's a 17-year-old boy here, is a spirit here. And she started crying. Well, he wanted to tell her that he was in God's grace. And one of the reasons that she had come for reading is that I didn't know that she wanted to contact him or anything, but she belonged to Seventh-day Adventist, and they had told her that her son was in purgatory. And I can't imagine, I don't care what religion you are or what kind of person you think you are, you have a mother who's lost her child, okay? I don't care if they're 10, 15, 20, whatever. What kind of cruelty is that? So now you've already gone through the stress of the fact that your child's dead. He died of an overdose of drugs, okay? And now you're telling the parents, oh, of course, you know, they're not going to heaven. They're not. Who are
right.
you? Are you
right.
to doing that to somebody, okay? I don't care what religion you are, and I don't care who sets yourself up as a messenger of God, what kind of uncompassionate person are you that you are spreading this bullshit and harming people? So that was the very first case, and she was so relieved. And that's what he wanted her to know. He was sorry for what had happened, but he also wanted his mom to know, "Mommy, I'm in God's grace," so that she could relax and relieve. And that's the first time that's ever happened to me in my entire life, because I don't know that I believed that we went to hell, but you know, I heard that and I knew that, and that's what they thought of people that committed suicide. So the second time that happened was also in the store, just because I used to work a lot of hours there. And a lady comes in, she's in her 60s, and her son had hung himself when he was about 48, had a lot of financial difficulties, and he showed me the rope, which I didn't need to see. Because I said, "That's sure." I said, "Okay, I don't need to see the rope." But he also told me, "I want my mother to know I'm in the heavenly realm and that I've seen God." And so those are two mothers on two occasions, and we're talking a lot of years here. That's happened to me twice in all the years that I've been reading, okay? But both of those occasions told me that if a person committed suicide, that God is not then punishing you on the other side. You may have lessons to learn, that's true, but he's not torturing you or sending you out into the darkness somewhere, because that's not the God of love that you know, or the God of love that you should know. And I know that people that don't believe in psychics or mediums, whatever, they say, "Oh, you're just seeing demons," or "You're just seeing whatever." You know what it is? The problem is they're not seeing nothing. There's your problem. They're not seeing anything. They're right. Not knowing. They're not open. Their mind and their sight is not open to anything. And they're not feeling spiritual presence, God's presence, anything. They are just brainwashed into believing what their particular religion, God, what they say is God or what God said. I mean, how many times have you been in a church? And Lord knows I've been to several different ones. And they'll say, "When Jesus said this, this is what he really meant." That's just the interpretation of the particular church, okay? And that's the same with suicide and everything. Everybody else has their thing or their take on it. But the truth of the matter is that when you die, no matter what, yes, you have to answer for the things you've done. But if you are distraught, and this is not to encourage people out there to commit suicide by any means, okay? But it doesn't mean that God has shut the door on you, because he absolutely has not, okay? And I can say that because I've seen those two spirits, and those were the people I was reading. They weren't some demon. This was her 17-year-old boy, and that was her 49-year-old son, of the older lady that I saw. So, you know, that to me is proof positive, although I didn't need to be proven, okay? I don't need those things. I think most people that read, including Pat, we don't ask for proof. You're just given it. I've never questioned anything, oddly enough, in that regard. I've never said, right, okay, prove it to me, show it to me. I've never done that. And sometimes I'm thinking, okay, no, don't show it to me.
I don't want to know.
Yeah, there are some times when I'm like, no, thank you. So regarding suicide, that's my take on it. And like Pat said, it's true. I have been in bad places in my life where I just thought, what's the point of living? I thought it myself. What's the point of living? You know, now what am I going to do? Everything's hopeless. There are many, many people, especially this time of year, when people are worried about their money, they can't enjoy Christmas, blah, blah, blah. And it's really not about that at all. It's about believing and understanding. So what if you don't have a fancy dinner? If you have a dinner, if you have food at all, that's gratitude, okay? I know that sounds awful when I say that and everybody's sitting down to a turkey dinner, but that's what you're going to look at. What do I have, and how am I going to make this work for me? So it's, you know, I think we've become very materialistic, and funnily enough, you know, I was talking to my son earlier about, you know, when people ask you, is it pagan to put up a Christmas tree? Of course it is. Who cares? All the rituals are pagan. Every church has an altar and candlelight. Where do you think that came from? Okay. Yes, we have pagan rituals, but so what? You know, pagans, I guess this is going off the subject a bit, but pagans understood the earth. They had gratitude. They had blessings. They understood harvest. Yes, they worshipped the moon and sun goddess and so on. But it didn't mean they were bad people. They just didn't know of Jesus Christ, or they didn't know whatever. It doesn't mean it was terrible. It's just that they had a different perception, and perhaps a healthier one than most people today. And when we put up a Christmas tree now, I'm not thinking pagan anything, okay? I'm thinking, okay, I've got a pretty tree up, makes me feel good. All my ornaments of my life, my memories, all through the years. And that's what it means to me. I'm not dancing naked in the woods or carving things in trees. And
oh, come on, Rosemary. We know better. Come on.
Oh, yeah, you caught me in my cloak and naked in the woods. Yeah. So, you know, those things are like Christmas. And for everybody, and I know this would stir people up. For anybody who's interested, Jesus Christ was not born on Christmas Day, okay? That's it. He was not. We celebrate it. And we honor that, but he was not. I mean, think about your Christmas cards, okay? And you see lambs on there. Lambs are only born in spring. They're not born in dead of winter, okay? So, no, think about that. Think about the whole nativity thing, okay? So it's not true that he was born. I think they're not exactly sure of the date, but I think it's more towards March, maybe February, March. Some people believe it.
Yeah.
It's later. It's mm-hmm. certainly in a slightly warmer climate sign.
Right.
And to upset everybody, apparently the god Pan was born on the 25th of December.
Oh, gosh.
But nobody has that in their heart. This is a day that you honor the birth of Christ, and that's what it means in your heart and your mind, okay? So it's not a terrible thing that we celebrate. That's what we're used to. That's what we know. I can't even imagine anybody changing Christmas or whatever to the springtime. It just wouldn't feel the same. But it's what's in your heart. What's in your heart and what's in your mind, what you understand and what you know. So, but is it truth? No, it's not the truth. Jesus was born a little bit later on here. But that's okay, all right? It's what we know, what we've grown up with. But it doesn't make it, you know, I think we're all brainwashed. And when you look further into things, you really will understand when you look at other religions when they think the Messiah was born. But I always think, every time I see the lambs on the Christmas card, I think, now, that's springtime.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of interesting. So, you know, I could go on about that because I love Glenn Kimball. I don't know if you've read his books. Pat, have you read Glenn Kimball at all?
Uh-oh.
Well, let me tell this little story because there's not many people online tonight.
You know why?
Why?
You know why? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer's on right now.
Yeah, it's like I must say this. When Dancing with the Stars was on, I was thinking, the finale of Dancing, because I liked it, and I had it on with the sound off, and in between Pat talking, I was going out there watching who was on next. So
oh,
I liked that. Yeah, so let me just talk a little bit about Glenn Kimball. So anyway, I bought both his books, and he was at one time an atheist. Okay.
Do me a favor. Say his first name again.
Glenn Kimball.
Kimball. Okay.
Yeah, he was on Art Bell show. He's an amazing guest, by the way. So listen to him a lot when he used to go on there. So he was an atheist, and he took himself and 10 scientists, and they wanted to prove that Jesus never existed. They were going to go and research the Dead Sea Scrolls. I mean, they were going to do a real investigation here because they wanted to prove that none of this was true. And what he discovered, not only was it true, but he actually discovered so many truths about Jesus. And that's why his books are really good. I mean, things that you don't read in the Bible. He talks about how Jesus rode on Palm Sunday into the town on an ass, you know, a donkey. And in those days, if you owned a donkey, you were pretty well off. See,
right.
We equate that with some kind of poverty or, you know, poor or something that's not true. So there were so many things that he would, and one of the funniest programs I listened to when he was on Art Bell was he starts laughing and they're both laughing. And you know, when people laugh on the radio, it's kind of infectious. So Art Bell is saying to him, okay, all right, cut it out. What's so funny? And he said, okay, I got to say this. This just blows my mind. He goes, okay, we have three wise men, right? And he goes, yeah, okay. We have the star, David Bright, okay. He goes, okay. So three wise men suddenly saw the star, and they arrived in Bethlehem, just like that. He said, okay. So we had no trains, no boats, no transportation at all in those days. He said, those men traveled from three different continents almost a year before Jesus was born. Not at the night that the star was shining. So, and though they had the star shine before, I believe three times it appeared to them. And it's just, there's so many things that are left out on a biblical sense where you don't have the whole story. And people never question it. They kind of look at it and go, you know what, you know, yeah, the three wise men, oh, okay, how do you think they got there? You know,
right. Well, you know, that's what astronomers who say that the Star of David, you know, that came
right
in the skies, that's what the wise men saw. And they said, they've traced it back that it was in December, what we call December now, when that star did appear and the wise men saw it. And so that's why they're saying he was probably born more in June, because it took them that long to get there once they saw. But their astronomy-wise, there was a star that appeared in December. So that's why they're saying the following years when they probably finally showed up.
Yeah, because it wasn't that at all. It took them so long to travel. Imagine if you had to rely on a donkey or whatever, or a camel, whatever you're trying to mean,
yeah,
transportation, which was not a car, by the way, or a train or a plane or anything, and it just took so long. So he always made me laugh because he would make you think about the things that we believe or we understand to be true, where we do not have the whole picture. And I actually, he said that, Jesus had a stepbrother. They discovered so many things. And remember that this man was a hardened atheist, and he changed his mind. When he understood the story of Jesus, and he understood that the whole thing, as it was truly written, not what bits of it that you have in the Bible. You don't have bits of it in the Bible. You don't have all of it, okay?
Right.
And he explains so much more. I don't understand the secrecy of not telling people the whole story. Why would you keep things from people? Why not explain something? And people go, oh, yeah, I get that. You know, because I don't think that's so bad for people to actually know the truth. And here's another thing I want to mention, too. I know we got off the subject of suicide, but I think this is interesting for people. The House of David, okay, Mary and Joseph belonged to the House of David. That's like the Kennedys, okay, in this country. So they weren't poor. They may have been humble people, they may have been good people, but they were not poor, okay? So when they got to Bethlehem, which apparently was not a stable either, it was a cave, which is now a tourist attraction and things built around it, because my son's been to Israel, so he said it's a big hype or tourist thing, okay, the birthplace of Jesus. So he leaves Mary in the cave, and some of those actually nativity scenes kind of looks like a cave a little bit. Okay, if you look at them, and he goes into the town to find, not an innkeeper, okay, to find a midwife to deliver baby Jesus, and her name was Salome. Now, Salome is mentioned in the Bible only once, when Jesus was on the cross and people were watching him. They mention Salome. They don't say who the hell she is, okay? But Salome was Jesus' midwife, and she came back with Joseph and delivered the baby Jesus, and Salome had a withered hand, and when, you know, a crippled hand. So when she delivered the baby Jesus, that was the very first miracle ever. Her hand was healed. Now, why can't you write that in the Bible for people to know? It is in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's in, yeah, all that stuff is in there. Why can't you tell people that stuff? Because that's the truth, okay?
And well, the reason why is because the politicians and church and state were all combined back then. And so the deal is when the Bible, the chapters, that you know, it's written over several hundred years, actually, from different authors. And most people back then were not educated to read or write. So it was in Hebrew, Latin, Greek. It's been translated, retranslated. So as years go by, and now you have a Catholic church and you have a lot of power now. You know, they own properties and they charge taxes. And they were, the popes and the bishops were politicians. They owned land and they were very wealthy. They became very wealthy from the church. So the way that you kept getting wealth was to have people, that's where one of the things came about, if you don't go to church on Sundays, you're going to hell, from the Catholics. You know, they had all this control over people that you have to go to church once a week. You've got to tithe 10%. All these rules started coming about. And so people were given their sheep, their chickens, their gold, whatever they had to give 10%. Or the tax collectors came around and took it from them, whether you went to church or not. So the church became very, very large, very wealthy, very politically powerful with all of the heads of all the European leaders. That's why Vatican City is a city, because of the power that they amassed and the wealth they amassed. So the way you keep people coming to church and paying their 10% or more is illiterate people who can't read or write. You don't want them to be able to read or write, because that way you can totally control them. It's all about power and control. So the Council of Trent back in the 1700s, when all the church leaders and politicians across Europe gathered together, and they went through the books of the Bible, because there was a big push from King James and other people. They wanted the common everyday person. Some people were now the upper class people, wealthier people were educating their children and themselves so they could read or write. So being that the Bible and Christianity was huge, people were starting to say, we want to be able to read the Bible too, not just the popes and the bishops and the religious leaders. We want to read the Bible. So before they released the Bible, they all got together, and it was several weeks. They went over every verse in every book of the Bible, and that was called the Council of Trent. And they threw out over 220 books of the Bible they deleted that they didn't want the common everyday person to know about. Jesus taught about reincarnation. Jesus had a very bad temper as a child. When I took comparative religion classes in college, our professor actually read to us in class several of the thrown-out books. It's called the canonized version is what you hear, the canonized Bible. And so there's 220 books that they're there, and you can find them if you go looking for them, but you're not going to find them in the Bible. And it gives all the years of Jesus. You know, Jesus was born, and then we didn't hear from him again until he's 30 years old or whatever, going around doing it. What happened in between? Back in those days, most people were married and had kids by the time they were 30, because most people didn't live past 45 or 50. So 30, he's already past middle age. So what happened to all those years? Well, there's books of the Bible that tell where he went, what he did, and how he lived. But it shows that he was a man. And people don't want to think that Jesus is anything but a supernatural God on the planet. They want to throw out his humanness and his man, you know, his physical manness. They just want to keep him as the Son of God, as this idol of perfection when he wasn't. Because then people realize, well, heck, he was just a man that was the Son of God, but he was human. So more people could relate to him. And the more people that could relate to him, they could develop their own relationship and thoughts about Jesus, and then they don't need the church to tell them what to think, how to think, when to pray, what to pray, that Jesus was a God, that you have to go to him through me, the Pope and the priest. You know, it's just like confession. I'm not Catholic. I never could understand why you have to go and tell your sins to a human being. Why can't you talk to God directly? That's, Protestants are taught that. You see? So it's all about power and control and keeping this organization and this establishment of this religion together to keep power and control. I mean, ultimately, that's why America was created, because the Puritans were being told how to worship. You had to go to the church, the English church, and all this stuff. And that's where America even came from. They wanted to get away from being totally controlled about their religious freedoms. So exactly. That's why, to answer your question, which you already know the answer, we've got a radio show, so I'm going to talk. But that's why all of this has happened. It's all about power and control. It doesn't mean the words of Jesus or God are not profound and aren't real, but the rest of it is politics. The rest of it is purely politics. So if you really want to know about Jesus and you really want to know about the Bible, you got to go read the books of the Bible they threw out that they didn't want the common everyday person to read. And so it happened after they decided how many books of the Bible they were going to keep in. That's when the King James Version was written, so that educated upper class people could read the Bible, and then finally everybody could read. So this is all structured religion and politics. You know, the Word of God is in there, but yeah.
But I think the other thing, you're right, everything has to be structured so you don't question, that you're just supposed to believe but never question anything.
Right.
One of the things that people don't understand too is that when Jesus rose from the dead, okay, his family were persecuted. Now you think, there were all these people that were sorry that Jesus was killed. There were people, you know, when they had that eclipse and everything, there was all kinds of signs in the sky and people were scared and all kinds of stuff happened. And there were people that converted to believing in Jesus. But even for all that, his family were persecuted. People were afraid of them. And they actually went on a ship to England. And Mary Magdalene is actually buried in some secret, the church is just as bad in England, okay? Buried in some secret place in England. So then there's also that theory, too, of what people saw when Jesus ascended into the sky. They said a silver cloud. But, you know, if you just read between the lines, so to speak, it could be that he came from, you know, that these were, it could be the Galactic Federation. I believe they exist, you know. They could have been emissaries from a higher place, you know, that came to pick Jesus up. I'm not so sure if it was a cloud. It may have been a spaceship. I mean, there are theories around that, and I really don't know. That's just
right.
What I'm saying. But that's not absolutely clear. But there's so many things. And here's another thing, too. Judas Iscariot was Jesus' best friend. He was
right.
Most favorite of all the disciples. People think that he was just some sneaky person that turned Jesus in. He was actually closer to Jesus than all of the disciples. In fact, some of the disciples were actually jealous of him because he had this close relationship with Jesus, and Jesus actually told him things that he did not tell the other disciples, secrets or things that he would, you know, find it, you know, that he thought that he needed to know that were just between him and God's word and so on. So, you know, Judas was not, even though he was picked as the person to betray him of all people, Judas was not this terrible person as we are led to believe, you know, the villain, so to
speak.
He was actually so beloved by Jesus. So
when
you listen to, I wish Art Bell, those shows are still on the air, because I'm going back years now, but I used to listen to Glenn Kimball a lot, and I only have two books. I do not know if he's written another one, but it's a real eye-opener to really see it from, like you would write about your next neighbor, where you know their habits and you know who they are and you know who they associate. You're going to have more of the truth from that. And even the disciples, none of them were poor. How do you think they lived? They traveled all over the place. What did you think? They just lived off the kindness of people throwing them scraps? No. None of these people were really poor. They just did not flaunt their wealth. That's it. They were good people. They were hardworking people. But they did not flaunt what they had. And it's a real eye-opener to see another side of it and to see who Jesus really was. But I just felt that Glenn Kimball, I have a lot of respect for him because he was very honest about that he was an atheist. But he changed. He changed his mind. They all did. Because it seems such a proof positive that what the things they found, that Jesus did exist. And I do think he was a super being. I know he, I mean, they say that Jesus had a 12-strand DNA as opposed to ours. And I think that if we evolve, right, like we're supposed to spiritually, that we could get to that, that we, our DNA can change with our evolving and our spiritual elevation. So I think that's possible because I do think we could be healers. I don't know if we could reach Jesus Christ, you know, standards by any means. But he definitely had those gifts, and his message lives today because he was love. And that's
right.
What we're lacking in the world today, that we don't love one another, too busy killing each other and doing horrible things to even, and then to turn around and say, oh, I'm a Christian or I believe in God, really? And you're a pig all week, okay? And then you go to church on Sunday.
Right.
That's what I say. I hate people that are like that. They're so judgmental of other people. Yeah, it is. It's really ridiculous. The most important thing, if you want to think of Christmas this year, understand that God hears you, be grateful for everything. That's who's got your back, not somebody down the road, not somebody in a priest outfit who's going to forgive your sins. You have no right doing that, okay, by the way. Oh, I'm sure that I'll get a nasty email now. I don't care. that's the truth. That's just a man. And we are not flawless. Look how many times you see things, the corruption in the church, you know, somebody sleeping with somebody's wife or the choir boys or not. I'm not just talking about Catholic church. I'm talking about anywhere. We are imperfect. We're just human beings. So should you trust that? No. You should just trust in the divine spirit of God. And then you're talking to the operator, not the monkey grinder.
Right.
Not the monkey.
Right.
On the grinder.
You know, that's funny. I feel like Jesus, you know, like Buddha and other people, he was a great master and a great teacher that came to the earth to bring enlightenment, to bring the message of love. You know, because up until he came, the Torah and the Old Testament, so to speak, that we use, it was an eye for an eye, just like the Islamic faith is today. It's an eye for an eye. If someone steals something, you cut their hand off. You know, if someone looks at someone the wrong way, you poke their eyes out. And so the Hebrew faith and the way the Middle East was back then was an eye for an eye. It was very barbaric, very bloodlust. You know, they were making sacrifices still with animals and that sort of thing. So he came to bring a different message. He came to help shift evolutionary man's process here in our path on the earth. He came to take us to a different level, so to speak. And so if you believe in a God of love like I do, that's what Jesus' message was. He was, you know, it was a God of love, not an angry, vengeful, spiteful God that people were afraid to offend. You know, he was trying to bring a more personal relationship based on love versus fear. Because when life is full of fear, you're going to be controlled by your fear. You're not going to make the best choices, and you're not going to have a fulfilled life. So that's what his message to me was. He was trying to move mankind from a fear-based reality to a love-based reality of compassion. Now, as a human being, you know, he did have a man's body. He was a rebel. I mean, he was standing against all of society and all of the governments. He was a rebel. He had anger. You know, he had anger. He went to the temple and threw over when the money changers were charging even the old poor people an alms to get into to go pray. You know, they didn't have money to go pray. He threw the tables over. You know, he wouldn't, when he was captured, he absolutely refused to defend himself to the government. He didn't speak. You know, he was a rebel. He wasn't just this passive, turn the other cheek kind of guy that people want to believe that he was. You know, he also had a prejudice. Being in that time, the Philistines, the Sumerians. Okay, look at the Philistines. He brought all the priests out and told them what hypocrites they were in front of the whole city. You're not living by my father's word. You know, he called the politicians and the priests and the religious leaders out. But think about this, too. When they were having their dinner, this one woman came up and she asked for food. And they said, no, you're a Samaritan or whatever you were, they weren't going to give her anything to eat. Now, this is Jesus at the table with his disciples, okay? And she said, but Master, even the dogs under the table get to eat crumbs when they're dropped. And he goes, oh, you're absolutely right. And he gave her food. But the first inclination was no, you're not one of us. So think, you know, people don't think about that. You know, they had their own prejudices, and even though he was the Son of God, he was still a man. He still was raised in that culture, in that society. He still adhered to their values and their morals and their ethics and their way of life. Just like here he has all these supernatural abilities. He can heal, all right, instantaneous healing. Well, think about this, too. They went to the wedding, wherever this wedding was, and, you know, back then a sign of wealth was how much food and wine you could give to your guest. Well, there was more people that showed up at the reception, and they were running out of wine. So Mary, being a friend of the family, knew how critical and how humiliating this would be for the family. She goes to her son Jesus and says, please, son, they're running out of wine. Would you please turn the water into wine? Well, that's like a magic trick. Think about it. That has nothing to do with spirituality. That's to keep your neighbor from being humiliated. So it's kind of an abuse of power if you want to look at it that way, but he did it. He turned water into wine so they can continue with their wedding ceremony and nobody would be embarrassed. So think of what all the other little things they came and probably asked him to do that's not in the Bible. You know what I'm saying? What else little magic powers did he have that people abused and took advantage of or whatever? So he had definitely had gifts and abilities. He was definitely human. Just like we are, the Spirit of God was within him. He's just a master spirit, and truly I do believe the Son of God, whatever you believe God to be. But the message of Jesus has been perverted and, you know, tainted. And once you put it into man's hands, it's going to get perverted by ego and greed and power. So I just go back to the original tenets of what he came to do. I think he came here to evolve us spiritually, to have a life of love. And if the basis of your life is love and a relationship with God, how much better off for you than living in fear? That's what I take from Jesus, and that's how incredibly powerful his message was to have lasted all these years. I mean, fads come and go all the time, and look how long this faith has been on the planet. You know, so that goes along back to what we were talking about with suicide. People... To me, when people commit suicide, what I've studied and what I know, I mean, there's been times I didn't want to be here. I was in so much pain back in 2010 from rheumatoid and fibro. I got down to 110 pounds, and I told God one night, and I was dead serious, Rosemary, dead serious. I actually wrote out my last will and testament, because at that point, the only energy I had was I fed the horses twice a day. I don't take major pain medicine. I was taking 16 ibuprofen a day. My hair hurt. I mean, if the wind just blew across my face, the breeze, excruciating, I was in so much pain. I ate peanut M&Ms and water. I had no strength to cook at all. And I told God one night, I said, this is it. I've had it. I have had it. I said, I have a $250,000 life insurance policy. So when I die, my mother will be able to have money to take care of these horses and feed them so they don't go to the slaughterhouse. There'll be enough money to pay this house off I'm living in, and she'll have money left over. I said, but God, I'm telling you right now, I've had it. I said, you either heal me or you kill me, because I absolutely positively refuse to live another minute in this type of pain. I wasn't doing anybody any good. The only time I didn't hurt was when I was doing a reading, because when I'm doing a reading, I kind of detach from my body. You don't feel your physical body. But any other time, I hurt so badly I could barely breathe. And I wrote my last will and testament. I had called family and friends. Of course, I'm not going to tell them I'm fixing to die. I wouldn't do that to them that way. But I would never take pills or cut my wrist or shoot myself, because that would be so cruel to my family. That would be so incredibly cruel to do that to them. They would feel guilty forever. Oh, we should have gone and helped her. What more? I would not put them through that torture. But as a spiritual healer, I know how to leave this physical body and just not come back. I know how to do that. Indians taught me how to do. I know how to do that, and that's what I planned on doing. I planned on leaving my body, when they did the autopsy, they'd say, we have no cause of death. She didn't have a heart attack. We don't know what happened. My family could live with that, okay? They could not live with me committing suicide. That would torture them forever. That would be cruel to them. But anyway, I knew, and I was dead serious. I drew the line of saying, God, you heal me or you kill me, because this is it. So that night I had a dream. And these three angels with the big white wings, and they had the white garment, the gold around their waist. They didn't have harps or halos, but these three angels came up. And I know I've told you this story before, but in case people are listening. And they were whispering, and I couldn't hear them. And I got really angry. It's one of those dreams where you actually can see yourself. So I'm facing these angels. They're like whispering. I'm getting teed off because it's like, what the heck? Speak up. And I finally yelled. I said, if you want to give me a message, yell. I can't hear you. So they started talking very loudly, and they were all in unison saying, don't forget to heal yourself. You must raise your vibration. You must raise your vibration. And I actually woke myself up in my sleep saying that. And I wrote it down on my last will and testament, to heal yourself, you must raise your vibration. I went back to sleep. So anyway, the next morning when I woke up, I looked at the ceiling and said, well, I'm still here, God, but you've only got a few hours left, because I'm not going to be here by the end of the day. I mean it. And all of a sudden, the light bulb went off about healing myself, which I already knew. I'd already tried to raise my vibration. But the hopelessness that I felt, Rosemary, the depth of despair, the depression, the lethargy, the pain was so overwhelming and consuming. Trying to raise your vibration when you're in that situation, even though you and I both know how to do it, it's monumental. I mean, for me to sit up on the side of the bed would take me 45 minutes to an hour just to get on my elbows and push my physical body in a sitting position. I cannot tell you how debilitating chronic diseases can be, and it does take every bit of your strength just to breathe. I've been there. I have been there. And I will tell you now, to bring this full circle about what we're talking about with suicide, I was angry with God, and I drew the line in the sand. And I will tell you right now, that same day when I went out to get my little yard cart and put this, you know, I'm pulling these 50-pound bales of hay, 50-pound sacks of feed. I can't even brush my own hair. I'm so weak. But I always rallied my strength to feed my horses, because that my horses are the only reason I'm still here. That gave me a purpose. That gave me a reason to get out of that bed. That gave me a reason to move and walk and to breathe, was to keep them alive. And that day, the light bulb went off in my head, and I actually said, from now on, and I only use the word, only time I've ever heard the word rebuke is in the Bible, but it just came to me spiritually. I just started rebuking this rheumatoid and fibro. I rebuke you. No, I absolutely will not have you in my body. You're out of here. No, I refuse. I refuse. I wouldn't even watch the commercials on TV with rheumatoid. I'd mute it or change the station. And within 3 weeks, I had absolutely zero fibromyalgia pain. And within 3 weeks, I had no rheumatoid pain except one bone in my left wrist, because I refused to let that in my consciousness anymore. I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, so to speak, put my big girl panties on, and I had a renewal of energy to fight and to raise my vibration and to no longer let my brain stay in the place where it was, of this chronic illness that was causing me such despair that I was suicidal. And that's what I want to tell people about suicide. I don't know how people who don't have any kind of faith can do it. To me, I can't do anything without spirit. That's the center of my whole universe, and the core of my being is everything comes from spirit. So I can understand the despondency, the despair, the lack of energy, the depression. I've been there. I have been there on the brink. I have been there. But I also know that it's not a depression. You can't just snap your fingers and you get out of it. I understand that. But you do have to make a choice. And you do, no matter how debilitated you are, you do have the power to make the choice that you're going to live or die. Because that's where I was. I'm either going to live or I'm going to die. And the thing about life is that, look at me 3 or 4 years later. I'm on radio shows. I'm talking to people. I'm doing readings all the time. I'm helping people. I do meditations. I'm starting classes. Everything now has led up from that moment in time, was like a turning point. Because from that time forward, my body has more or less healed. I was 100% healed for about 4 years. Then I had a lot of grief, and some of my illnesses came back, but they never have been as bad as they were. So what I'm saying is, you never give up hope. This is the thing I want people to take from this. Never, ever, ever give up. Never give up. I don't care if you literally, like I have been on the ground outside when I used to fall. It would take me 45 minutes to get in a standing position, dragging myself through the dirt, the mud, over to a fence or a tree or something to literally try to raise myself up off the ground. I live alone with nobody to help me. So you really never give up because you don't know what's ahead of you. You don't know what your mission is. And I truly believe if we're still waking up every day, your mission's not complete. Because I don't think you don't leave this body until God says it's time to go. Now, years ago, my mother went to a psychic, this was like 30 years ago, and I never heard this from anyone else, but she told her that my younger brother had chosen a very, very hard life, a lot of hard lessons, but that he had contracted, and before he came here, he made a contract with God that if things got too rough, he could choose to leave his physical body. In other words, suicide. And my brother did attempt suicide, and it didn't work. The gun didn't go off. It jammed. So I never heard that from anybody else, that you can make a contract to do that, but it kind of makes sense in a way. And so that's what I'm telling you. It wasn't my brother's time to go, or that gun would not have jammed. So I just feel like when you're connected to God, to Spirit, Buddha, Jesus, whatever you want to call it, when you really make that physical connection, that spiritual connection, that's what gives you hope. That's what helps you get out of the bed every day, because there is a purpose for everyone to be here. And even if you do commit suicide, I do not believe in pain and suffering. I don't believe you're going to hell. I just personally don't believe in any of that, because I believe in a God of love. And I do believe if you try to commit suicide, if God's not okay with it, if it's not your time, it's not going to work. And if God says, okay, you can't take it anymore, come home, it's okay. That's the way I look at it. That's the way I feel about it, very strongly. But my message to people is never give up. I don't care how bad it is, how tough it is, because look at the blessings. I've had so many blessings and met so many wonderful people. I'm helping people every single day of my life. I'm helping somebody. Every single day there's a phone call, an email, a chat. There's somebody making contact with me. And my whole life's purpose is to help lift mankind any way I can. Because in helping lift mankind, I'm helping to lift myself and grow as a person. We're all connected. So when you're feeling despondent and you're feeling down, reach out for help. If you need to go to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a priest, if you need to go into a hospital for inpatient care so you can get traction again, do it. Just never, ever give up, and know there is light, so-called, at the end of the tunnel. It will pass. Things don't stay bad forever, and I want teenagers especially to hear that. Teenagers are so hard, and that's when the highest suicide rates are. Your hormones are kicking in. You got bullying. You got acne. All this stuff. You don't know who you are. Your parents tell you one thing, you feel another. There's so much going on as a teenager that, think about it. I look back, there were times when I was a teenager and thinking, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to be here. But look what I would have missed out on. Look what all of us would miss out on, if we had given up. And so that's my point. If you're really that down and depressed, pick up the phone, call suicide prevention, call a friend, reach out, because there is so much more to living than that 1 or 2 minutes that you're thinking about leaving the planet. We all, every person on this planet just about has thought about it. You're not the only one. You're not alone. And so that's what I want people to know. You're not the only one having these feelings. But you have a choice to make, to give up or get up. Ooh, that's a good one. Give up or get up. I got to remember that. That just came to me. I got to write that down. That's a good one. That's a good one, Spirit. You either get up or you give up, okay? And my message is never give up. I don't care if you got to crawl on your belly. Never give up.
That's I agree. I totally agree with that. And I've been there too, but I'm not going to go into that because the time's getting on here. so, yeah, I know. Here we go, carried away. So Pat gave out your number. I'm going to give out mine, and then we're going to go to 727-215, who has been here with us from the very beginning. So I thank you for staying and listening through all of that. So give your number out, please, Pat.
Okay, my phone number for reading is 918-623-0064. My Facebook page is River Spirit Messages, and you can leave me messages there, or you can email me at patrivers33@gmail.com, and you put two T's in Pat. So that's P-A-T-T, Pen. I mean, what is my name? Pat Rivers 33 with two T's. Okay.
Okay, and mine is rosemaryfox.com, 727-524-1010. And I know that Pat has a show on Thursday, but I have a show tomorrow at, from 7 until 8:30, The Third Eye. And I will do a short speech tomorrow and do readings. That seems to, I've done that for the longest, that show. And then Pat has her show, it's 9 o'clock, right?
Yeah, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, yeah.
Yeah, River Spirit Messages on Blog Talk Radio. So, okay, so let's go to 727-215. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Oh. Yeah, you've been really patient.
I've been listening. It's been very informing. I love it. It was great, great, great.
Well, thank you. What's your name?
Pam.
Pam.
I didn't know it was
you, Pam. I'm on my home phone.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want my other phone to
okay,
die.
So then ask Pat a question.
Pat, I was wondering, do you see Stephanie with, let me find out what his name is, Terrence.
Wait, do I see Stephanie?
Yes.
That's his daughter.
That's who?
Yeah, that's my daughter.
Oh, okay.
With Terrence. Do you see her moving to Alaska or North Carolina with him?
With Terrence. Well, that's kind of one extreme to the other, Alaska, North Carolina. He must be in the military.
He's in the service. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Let me see. I just saw, the camouflage clothes on. Let me see. I think she's madly in love with this guy? I feel like she wants to be with him, but I'm hearing if she does, it'll be North Carolina. I don't see her going to Alaska. She may go visit, but I don't see her moving there. Let me see.
He put in to move to North Carolina, in June.
Okay. I feel like I'm just here in North Carolina. I can only tell you what they're telling me. I'm here in North Carolina. I think she's going to go back and forth visiting, but I feel like she might hang in there with this guy 6 months to a year. How long have they been together so far?
Well, about a year.
Oh, has it been a year? Okay.
Yeah, talking and everything, and she just went and met him last month.
I just feel like she's crazy about him. Let me see. Does that have to be background? Because that's the way of the feeling I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Do you think they'll be together?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying 6 months to a year. So I'm not sure that this is going to be forever. I like his energy and all, but I almost feel like he's older than she is. Does she kind of act immature or something?
She's 28 and he's 32 or 31.
I keep seeing him look off in the distance. So I don't know, is he planning on making a career or re-enlisting? Because I feel like I keep feeling like there's distance between them. So he keeps looking far away. So I feel like there's a pull that takes him away. Is he going to stay in the military?
Yes.
Okay, well, that must be what I'm seeing.
Yeah, he told her he wants to marry her.
Yeah, that's the feeling I get, but he's going to be leaving her. So that must be what I'm picking up then. I just feel there's a very strong bond between the two of them. I like his energy. I'm not saying he's perfect, But he's a gentleman, they're telling me, and as long as she doesn't get too clingy and dependent, he doesn't like that.
Okay.
She needs to be able to stand on her own two feet and be okay. He needs to know that when he's not with her, that she can make it without him. He doesn't need to be worrying about that she can't pay the bills or take care of herself or if they have kids. She needs to be a strong, independent person to be happy with him. Because, yeah, he'll like to baby her in the beginning, but I just see the guy licking off in the way far away in the distance. So that's what I can tell you. I think he's got good energy. I think they're going to be together is the feeling I get. But I think almost as soon as they're together, he's going to be gone. Is he in the, what is he, if he's in North Carolina, what is he, Army?
I don't know.
Marine or what is he?
He's either Marine or Air Force, I think.
Okay. Is that Fort Bragg that's in North Carolina?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. I don't know. I can't remember what branch of the service that is.
I don't know.
I just feel like he's going to be overseas somewhere.
But he put in for North Carolina. I don't know if he's going to get it, but he's been in Alaska for a while now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm here in North Carolina. That just feels strong to me, so I hope he gets that.
So if he gets that, for sure he'd be there at least 2 years.
Yeah. Yep, I keep hearing like they're going to be deployed. So the way the world's going, who knows what's going to happen.
I know.
Only thing is they keep bringing about drinking. Does she drink or he drink too much, or do they? Is there something about drinking going on?
Probably her.
Okay, well, that's going to be a problem.
Okay.
So make sure she has to get it. She's got to get that under control and really work on that issue.
Okay.
Because they're just saying alcohol is a problem here. So the thing is, if she can get that to where he doesn't have to worry about her and she can be strong and not be needy, clingy, that'll go a far way with the both of them. What did Rosemary pick up? Did you pick up that, Rosemary?
Well, I sort of know the situation. I do think that she'll be with him. I think if she's left alone too long, she might stray. She might go off into other interests and it might die. But I think there is a reason with not just the distance, because they have distance now, okay? It's not just the distance. There's something else that's going to transpire on the home front here. It may be somebody passing away or somebody very sick. There's going to be something that will keep her here a little bit longer than she plans to leave. That's what I think. Because there's a decision to be made here.
I saw that she would go back and forth and visit at first before she was there all the time, yeah.
It's some kind of decision to be made here. And I think it's important enough to not suddenly up and leave. There'll be a reason for her to stay here for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that she'll be with him. And if it doesn't last, it'll be her choice, not his. That's what I think.
Okay.
I like his energy, so I hope she sticks it out and grows up.
Yeah, he's
me
good
too.
Guy.
He's
yeah,
a really good guy.
She feels lots younger to me, you know, like maturity-wise than he does.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they say all the right things to each other, and the feelings are strong with, and the words they've had, the communication. So, I don't know. I like him.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Well,
he'll take good care of her. Let's put it that way. You know, he's got his priorities straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
She's just the one that needs to kind of grow up a little bit.
Yes, we do.
I didn't even know you had a daughter, so that's, you know, I've known nothing. I didn't even know you had a kid, especially one that old. I didn't think you were a whole bunch older than that yourself.
She doesn't look old either.
Wow.
Just a little bit younger than you. Not much.
Wow. Well, you don't look it in your Facebook picture.
She's got one of those, you know when you see these families and they never age? She's got one of those chitchy little faces that doesn't age. She does. She just has a really young face.
I'm telling you, I didn't know you had a kid that old for sure.
No, you wouldn't think so either. No.
Wow.
I agree.
It's that humidity in Florida.
Thank you. That's a compliment, and I will take it.
Okay, darling, we have to move on because we've only got like 20-something minutes and there's a few people here. So, anyway, I'm glad you listened. I thought, oh, this person's hung in from the beginning here. That's good staying power, Pamela. That's really good.
That's right. Good show. Good show.
Well, Merry Christmas if I don't talk to you.
Merry
and Happy
Christmas,
New Year.
Honey. Thank you. You too.
Okay,
and I will see you. I will see you tomorrow, Pamela.
Yes, you'll see me bright and early.
All right, I know.
Bye.
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 Okay.
I'm truly in shock she's got a kid that old. I'm in shock.
Well, Pamela's always been, like, good-looking. I always thought she had a pretty face. She has one of those, you know, cute noses, very sweet face. She has a very young look.
Wow,
yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, she is. But she deserves to look that good. That's what I think. She works hard, and she deserves to have this beautiful face. So I don't know.
She's got good energy. I just love her. Yeah.
She's got great energy. She's such a good person.
Yeah,
so,
she is.
Not too many people like her, I can tell you that. So are you ready to take the next person?
Sure.
Okay, 502-439.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good.
What is your name?
My name's Katie.
Katie.
Hi, Katie.
I love that name.
Hi. Thank you.
I named my horse that Katie Scarlett O'Hara after Gone with the Wind. Katie Scarlett O'Hara.
So what is your question,
Special
Katie?
Raven. I'm sorry.
What is your question?
Basically, I was just wondering about if you could tell me anything about my relationship status. I don't know if you need to be more specific.
The relationship you're in now?
Yes.
Okay, have you been with this person 3 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Before.
Okay, so everything's changing, and it kind of doesn't feel right to you. It's not that things aren't fixable, but I'm thinking that it's going down the wrong road here. I don't think it's you. I think that it's him. He's changed. It's kind of weird with people. And I don't know if it's this moon energy that we have where it's called the destiny changer between the November 11th and December 11th, which are both new moons. And there's a period of time right now it's called a destiny changer, where you're either going to end things or you're going to start something new, and it's somehow that energy is affecting people. And I think where he's concerned, he's not the same anymore. He doesn't feel the same anymore. It's just like there's obstacles here. There's obstacles in the way. There are excuses. There's a reason for you to want to hang on. But there's interference. There's outside interference here. There's a third wheel or some other interest that's taken in. I'm not saying he's jumping some other woman's bones here, okay? But there is another interest talking in here or some other thing that's making him think differently about your relationship. And instead of it being all love and that, it now feels all like, okay, what the hell? What's next, you know? Are you married to him, or are you talking about getting married?
We've talked about it a lot.
That's not going to happen, okay? It's like it's put on hold. You know, I'm feeling the marriage thing, and I'm thinking, okay, why is it so far away? It's kind of like you saying, okay, I've been with you this time, you know, when do you think we might get married or do whatever, and I'm reluctant to say, okay, let's do it in June. I'm reluctant to really give you a time, or else the time is so far off that you just kind of think, oh God, you know, maybe it's another year. Or there's too many excuses for not making it happen, okay? And you're at a point with this relationship where it should happen. You put the time in here with this person, and you're a pretty happy person, and he's not, he's a little bit more moody. than you could ever be.
Yes.
Oh God. I think I wouldn't have him. Because we would kill each other. Okay. So, but I don't, in answer to your, you know, the question about this, I think in the big picture, that is going to be somebody new. It's gonna,
well, and it was interesting that you mentioned, like, there's like a third party or interference. And you said you didn't know, you know, that was him. I think that is me. Like, I had just met somebody, like, just a couple of days ago. But that I kind of had interest in, but because I'm in a relationship, wasn't pursuing anything. But he found out about it, and that caused issues as well.
Well, I think that's going to cause an issue, as in no marriage. That's what I think.
Well, I think that was already off the table.
I think it's not, you kind of know sort of what the way it's going, but he's not bending here. But I don't think that you're going to be unhappy. You're still going to get married one day. You're still going to be happy. You're still going to be okay. Everything is all in divine order, whether we like it or not. It just is. Okay, Pat.
The very first thing they said, you know that song, Set Me Free, Why Don't You, Babe? Get out my life, why don't you, babe?
I do.
Okay, that's the very first song they started singing. My spirits sing, okay? I got singing spirits over here. I feel like, of course, y'all, you know, with the discourse I just heard, it validated what I was picking up from spirit, was that first thing that happened, it's not that you don't care for each other, but boredom has set in, like a routine, a rut. And both of you, it's not just him. I got to tell you what spirit's telling me, so don't kill me.
Okay.
I'm just the messenger, okay? The message here is that both of you are the kind of person that are always wanting excitement to a point, and if you get bored, you blame the other person. But you have to be honest and realize that when we get bored, it's because we've become boring. We can't blame other people for our boredom and our ruts that we get in. We do that to ourselves. So if you're in a relationship, you know, first there's the romance and the excitement, and then it goes into this other level, and then you're, after 6 months, you're thinking, okay, is this the right person? How much more time? There's phases that these relationships go through. And when you hit like that 3 to 4 year mark, even whether you're married or not, you know each other very well. You know each other's warts. You know what makes each other happy sexually. You got all that part worked out, okay? So now it comes down to the daily grind, and people start getting bored because they're not married, which means you're not truly working towards something like combining money and, you know, saving for a house and kids. You haven't made that step. And the other one is just the same thing. I go to work. I got my girlfriend. I got my boyfriend. We're going to see each other. You know, what do you want to eat? I don't know. Movie, I don't care. You're in that rut. So another person is not going to make you happy. Another relationship is not going to make you happy, because anything from the outside in is never going to work. You have to find that peace and that happiness inside of yourself first. And the thing that spirit wants you to realize, it's not two halves make a whole. It's two whole people coming together. So what I feel like right now, you really need to sit down with pen and paper, like my mom taught me years ago. You draw a line down the center of the paper from top to bottom. On the left, you put the pros. On the right, you put the cons. And you put the pros and cons of this relationship that you've been in for the last 3 to 4 years, the good points and the bad points. And you look at it honestly, because when we have these thoughts that just float around in our head, and women, we get all emotional and we just kind of roll things around. You put it on pen and paper in black and white, and you're looking at it, it kind of clears the air, and you can see the truth in a situation. Okay? And so really be honest about the good points, the bad points, and you have to, this is, you know, a relationship, especially marriage, it's a business. That's why you have to go to court and get a divorce. It's a legal business that two people, it's a partnership. You're combining resources. So I just feel like y'all both become bored with one another. You're aggravated. You have resentment towards each other because he's kind of hard-headed and stubborn. But you can be too.
Did you date him too?
No, I'm just going by what they're telling me. But you can be the same way they're telling me. You can be hard-headed and stubborn too. Is that true? Because
yeah,
that's what
a little
we're
bit. That is very. That's actually yes. Very
okay.
True.
Thank you very much. So, so it just comes to a point of realizing that. You know what happened to me one time? I don't know how many callers we have, but I was dating this guy, okay? And then I met another, we've been dating 3 years. I met another guy. Oh, my God, I feel madly in love with him. He was a high school stud on campus, and I cannot believe I ran into him after I graduated. He was, like, madly in love. So I had, like, this love triangle. Now, I hadn't done anything with the second guy, but I sure was thinking about it, right? So what was really funny, the radio came on, and that song came on, Torn Between Two Lovers. Yours probably weren't even born yet. But it's like,
no,
torn between two lovers, feeling like a fool. And I'm like, oh, God, oh, God. I was feeling so guilty, even though I'd not done anything. I was so guilt-ridden, I turned the station, right? Well, the radio, a week before, my sister and I, this is Christmas, we've been at the mall, and this guy out front was giving away $5 bills. He goes, we've got our radio station's phone number written on this $5 bill. If you don't spend this money, you have a chance of winning $500 if you hear our number being called out. Well, my sister immediately went and spent the money, all right? I kept that $5 bill in my pocket. So I'm hearing Torn Between Two Lovers. And I'm oh, my God. I flip the station, and the guy goes, let me repeat these numbers again on our $5 bill. And I said, oh, my God, those are my numbers. Well, we didn't have cell phones back then. So I go to the first 7-Eleven. I got to go stand in line at the payphone. They give you 5 minutes to call in, right? I'm trying to find a quarter to make the phone call. Do you know I won $500 for feeling guilty? I won $500 because I felt guilty because I was torn between two lovers. So I don't know about you, but I got rich off of it. All I can tell you is, you got to be honest and sit down and decide what you want and then go from there.
Well, that's honestly, I think he was like at the door listening, so I couldn't say much, but I'd kind of already decided on that.
Right.
But, like, financially and stuff, I'm not working at the moment. I'm a single mom, so I'm getting ready to start a new job. But it's kind of like I was, you know, stuck here, and he kept saying that he's going to change and things are going to get better and trying to convince me that once I get this job not to leave. But I didn't really have high hopes for that.
Well, I hope, Rosemary, you could hear her. It sounded like she's in a tunnel. I couldn't understand something about a job. I couldn't hear what she was saying.
Well, I didn't hear it either.
It just sounded like you went to an echo. Yeah.
I moved, sorry. No, I was saying that kind of had already decided that I didn't want to be with him, like I outweighed the pros and cons for a very long time, but financially we lived together and I was let go from my job last year, and so I'm not able to go anywhere else right now, so I'm kind of stuck here. And I got a new job. I started the first of the year, and I had told him, you know, I wanted to leave and this and that, and that as soon as I got this job I was out, and he's, you know, pretty much trying to beg me, saying he's going to change and not to leave. But I had already figured that that was just, he's used that line before.
Well, you got your intuition, your gut instincts, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like this. I dated two different guys. Each one of them I dated for 4 years, all right? But I'm the kind of person that I made sure before I broke up with anybody that I had done everything humanly possible to make it work. I even would tell the guy what the problem was and what he could do to fix it. I mean, they weren't having to guess and read my mind. You know, so any relationship I ended, when I ended it, I walked away with a clear conscience because I knew there was nothing else I could do. So if you've gotten to that point.
I mean, I know I'm completely clear. Yes, I have spent all my energy for 4 years trying to make this work.
Well, then just have a happy holiday and get yourself, you know, start planning to get out of there when you can, you know.
Thank you. You confirmed what I've been thinking, so I appreciate it very much.
Well,
you
have a
wonderful
holiday.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you
for calling in.
All right.
Night-night.
Bye. Yeah, I won $500 for feeling guilty. That's pretty good.
Okay, we have another caller here, 914-439. And then I think we're just going to give out our stuff, and I'm going to play some Christmas music, and then we'll be done, I think.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What is your name?
This is Claudia. Claudia.
Hi, Claudia. So what did
Hi,
you...
Hi, I've spoken with Rosemary. I've spoken with Rosemary before, and I'm in a living situation that's... pretty convoluted. I'm currently living with my son and his girlfriend, and he just started a business. I was hoping to be able to move out, and had spoken with Rosemary. She had seen a time frame which hasn't quite come to fruition, and I was wondering what you saw in terms of my moving out and my son's business.
Okay, so Pat, you answer this question because I don't know what I said before, so I'm just wondering why. I know that time sometimes is changeable in spirit, or there may be a reason, but I'm curious what you're going to say, Pat.
Well, the thing is, too, people don't realize when they call a psychic is that we all have free will. And so free will, when spirit shows us something, a lot of times it's very accurate. But I always tell people, even when there's a destiny fate situation, like let's say we're destined to meet someone or destined to have something happen, we still have free will on how we're going to react to it. So a lot of times, you know, spirit doesn't have clocks and calendars. That's man-made. So we're having to go with validation we feel within ourselves of what other people have called back over the years, said, oh, it's exactly what you said or whatever. So it's one of those kind of things when it comes to time. So let me see. Okay, just like the last caller, I'm here in 6 months to a year. Have you been there 6 months to a year?
I've been here a year.
Okay, because it's exactly what I heard before, 6 months to a year. Okay, so let me see what that means. So are you, like, helping out so he can get the business going, and then you're hoping
yes.
he gets on his feet where you can go, right?
Yes.
Okay, let me see. Something's changing in 3 months. Is he expecting cash in 3 months? I don't know if it's, like, income tax back. Is there some money coming back to him?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, because I'm feeling like some money's going to come to him that he wasn't expecting or more than he expected. Like, they're saying, like, around March, April. I don't know, what is this, December? I cannot believe it's already December.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here in 6 months really strongly, so I think you're still going to be there through May.
Hmm.
May, I'm thinking.
Okay.
Maybe June. I'm here in 6 months from whatever now is. So, because something unexpected delayed you moving out. Was there problems with the home? They're talking about a roof. Were there issues like home repairs or something that's coming up or had to happen? Some kind of money put out that wasn't expected?
In the business, there was.
Okay. I'm just hearing 6 months very strongly.
Okay.
So I think if you can hang in there, I think it'll be that period of time. Now, they're telling me about August would be the latest. And I feel like you're going to be very happy at that point in time. It's not that you don't love your family, but it's kind of stifling for you. And so I'm here in August. By August, I feel like you've got your own place. You're out. And they're showing me, like, being at the beach with the sunrise. To me, that always shows new beginnings. That shows me a new chapter, new energy. Whenever they show me a sunrise like that, the person's at total peace. So it doesn't mean life's going to be perfect, but that means a transition is what I'm picking up.
Okay.
So things are going to be longer than you're wanting, but there's a reason for it. So just hang in there and just be grateful. That's what I do. When things are taking lots longer, instead of stewing about it, I just start being grateful for what I have now, not what I don't have or not what I want to come to me. I just start being grateful in the moment. And that helps me get through that anxiety and that feeling like you're in the wrong place, doing the wrong thing feeling.
Okay, now in terms of my son's business, he's had several setbacks, which is kind of the reason why I'm stuck where I am.
Right.
Do you see that?
Just tell me what it is. I know we don't have much time left. What does he do, just so I don't have to take the time to do that? What is it that he does?
He fabricates granite marble countertops.
Okay.
There's a fabrication and installation.
Is he trying to get a contract with, is that maybe what I'm seeing from March, April? Is he trying to get a contract like with the real estate people who are flipping houses or people who are doing reconstruction? Is he trying to align himself that way instead of just one job at a time at a time?
He is, yes.
Okay, that's what I feel is coming in March, April. I think that's what I'm picking up, that there's going to be an increase in money that he wasn't expecting, or it's more than he thought. But he's going to hire someone to help him. Does he already have one helper now?
He has a couple.
Okay, well, that's what I feel like. He needs to keep putting his bids in or trying to get contract work. They're saying contract work with other people. Because I feel like he'll be able to hire more people, like 4 to 6 people. And I think by May when you'll be able to say, I think this is going okay. I think he'll have like a 6-month contract work.
Okay, that sounds great.
That's what I'm picking up with him. That must be that boon of money, that change in the, because I was seeing setbacks, you know, the money going out they weren't expecting and setbacks. But, yeah, that's what I'm picking up.
Okay.
So I think things will look better from him from March till May, and then you'll be able to go on.
Okay,
do you have a grandchild? Do you have a grandchild, or is he trying to have a baby or something?
No.
Are they planning on having a baby?
He's not.
I'm hearing a
she
baby.
She may be.
Well,
she
I'm just
might,
saying
she
I,
might
I'm
be,
feeling
but
somebody
he's
may
not.
Be getting pregnant pretty quick around you, so I'm just throwing that out there. I'm hearing a baby.
Oh, okay.
Well, doesn't mean it's them, but you'll hear about a good friend, or you're going to hear about a pregnancy before the next 2 months. I feel like you're going to hear about a pregnancy.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I hope it's not him. he's not ready for one right now. You know, we're starting a new business, and certainly he just doesn't want to have to. He's stressed out enough as it is at this point.
Right. Well, there's always surprises in life.
There certainly are.
Well, you have a happy holiday. I don't know if Rosemary wants to add to that or tell me I was totally, she didn't pick up that at all, whatever she's got to say.
I actually think you're right about the business. I do actually, in the big picture, I see the business being really successful. I do not feel that once the obstacles are overcome, that there's going to be a whole bunch of obstacles. I see it moving forward and just moving at the pace it's supposed to. And I do think that around the same time as Pat, between March, April. But as regards to your move, I do see the perspective of doing that in February, but maybe the reason you can't or you won't be able to is because I'm seeing a delay in legal documents. It could be anything. It could be something you wanted and it's put on hold, but you know you're going to have it. I do see you moving. And I don't think it's later than May. I really don't. I think it'll be in and around that time. But I still see that something will come up around February, and you may be a lot frustrated over it, or you think, oh, that's what I want. Oh, why can't I get on with it? There's a delay in some kind of signing or legal document. And I do not know what I said to you before. Is that around the same thing as I said to you before?
Originally we had said possibly October. I did find something that I really liked in October, but it just financially and with the business situation was not able to make it happen, which was kind of frustrating to me. You know, it was along the time frame that you had said, and then the whole thing just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that can be really frustrating and irritating because I don't know what could have happened to make that more possible. But I think depending on your son's business here, that there's not going to be a whole bunch of obstacles down the road here. Mm-hmm. Not so much now. Right now, you're just feeling frustrated and irritated with everything and, you know, when. But I think that he's going to pay. Even if he's been fraught with problems, I don't think that it's going to be ongoing. I think he'll be fine.
Thanks.
So.
Okay.
All right, darling.
Okay.
It's the end
Thank
of the show.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And Nicole, anytime. So, Pat, I'm going to play. If you would say goodnight, just give out your phone number again, if you would. I'm going to play Christmas music, and it might not be the end of it. Okay.
Okay, 918-623-0064 is my phone number.
Okay, and mine is 775-24-1010. I want to wish everybody a wonderful upcoming Christmas, because I'm going to play Christmas music every show until you're sick of it, okay?
Yay!
but this is like real old-fashioned. This is really old-fashioned stuff. I may not always play. I like El Divo. I might play their Ave Maria one day because I really like that. But this is really old stuff. This is going to be, I think it's Doris Day, which I'm not a huge fan of.
America,
here we go.
Have a good
night,
everybody.
Everyone.
Bye.
Good night.